Because Maharaji was, for me, that mirroring process, and yet he was passionately alive. He was chiding and throwing things and screaming at people and laughing and holding and doing all that stuff. And at the same moment, it was just like a vast mountain of emptiness. We were all busy with our personality. Who can get his foot to massage it? Who can get closest? Who will he give a name to? Who will he love the most? There was a guy who I knew from the States, and he was kind of unbalanced at that time because he had had a bad love affair. And so I told him to come to India, and he came to India. Every time he tried to get near Maharaji, Maharaji would push him away, and I got really upset with Maharaji because this guy really needed something. So I brought him into the room, and I'd sort of aim Maharaji at him. You know, I'd do this kind of thing. And Maharaji would ignore him completely, and I would get more and more furious with Maharaji. And then at one moment, Maharaji turned and attended to him, and within a week, that guy had moved into the top slot in the whole temple, and he was going into the room when I couldn't, and I was hating that guy, absolutely detesting him. It was absolutely extraordinary. Because Maharaji saw where my mind was caught. I mean, he wasn't. I'm just projecting this. He was just a silly old man. But I experienced him as seeing where I was caught. And he didn't think, I think I'll show Ram Dass a lesson. His behavior, because each person in the room always thought the action was directed at them. Everybody in the room, that was the far out part. And I'm sure he didn't sit and say, well, now for him I'll do this, and then for him I'll do this, but if I move my hand this way, he'll get it. And he just did it. To me, this is the best teaching story that I have found to date. As I always say, if you've heard it before, think of how many times I've heard it. The train clanked and rattled through the suburbs of Tokyo on a drowsy spring afternoon. Our car was comparatively empty, a few housewives with their kids in tow, some old folks going shopping. I gazed absently at the drab houses and dusty hedgerows. At one station, the doors opened, and suddenly the afternoon quiet was shattered by a man bellowing violent, incomprehensible curses. The man staggered into our car. He wore laborer's clothing, and he was big, drunk, and dirty. Screaming, he swung at a woman holding a baby. The blow sent her spinning into the laps of an elderly couple. It was a miracle that the baby was unharmed. Terrified, the couple jumped up and scrambled towards the other end of the car. The laborer aimed a kick at the retreating back of the old woman, but missed as she scuttled to safety. This so enraged the drunk that he grabbed the metal pole in the center of the car and tried to wrench it out of its stanchion. I could see that one of his hands was cut and bleeding. The train lurched ahead, the passengers frozen with fear. I stood up. This story is being told by Terry Dobson, who was an Aikido, a Westerner who went and spent many years in Japan studying Aikido. And he has since died, and I read this in memoriam. So this is him speaking. I was young then, some 20 years ago, and in pretty good shape. I'd been putting in a solid 8 hours of Aikido training nearly every day for the past 3 years. I liked to throw and grapple. I thought I was tough. The trouble was my martial skill was untested in actual combat. As students of Aikido, we were not allowed to fight. Aikido, my teacher had said again and again, is the art of reconciliation. Whoever has the mind to fight has broken his connection with the universe. If you try to dominate people, you're already defeated. We study how to resolve conflict, not how to start it. I listened to his words. I tried so hard. I even went so far as to cross the street to avoid the chimpara, the pinball punks who lounged around the train station.